Welcome to the Eucharist Podcast with Wyoming Catholic College, responding to the call for Eucharistic renewal by sharing wisdom in God's country. I'm Jeremy Holmes, Academic Dean at Wyoming Catholic College.
And I'm Kyle Washit, its President, and welcome to this episode.
This week, Kyle and I are in Denver at the Spirit of Christ community with Father Trevor Lontine, an alumnus of Wyoming Catholic College from 2014. And we're here to talk about the Eucharist, as we do.
And it's still in the Easter season. So let me just say, Christ is risen.
Indeed, he is risen.
All right, we want to continue celebrating and thinking about the Eucharist in this Easter season, especially rejoicing in the risen Lord who is made present to us even now in the Eucharist.
And Easter is the season when folks enter the church. They come in, they're baptized, they're confirmed, and they receive Holy Communion. And, you know, that sometimes can raise some interesting questions for us as all kinds of people show up at Easter time to receive Holy Communion. And we were just a minute ago, we were talking about this verse in the book of Revelation when John sees the New Jerusalem descending from heaven. And it's this beautiful vision, and the reader's like, this is great. And then there's this maybe sort of dire-sounding comment, nothing unclean will enter the city. And I have a feeling he's not talking about old socks or, you know, things like that. You know, my kid's blue jeans. He's talking about demons. He's talking about people who may be unclean, will not enter the city. And all of a sudden, the music changes to a minor key.
And in fact, let me just say that sounds very Pharisaical. Isn't Jesus the kind of person who says, everyone come to me, you know, you who are tired, you who are weary, you who are sinners, come in. And so to hear in the New Testament this prophecy about nothing unclean will enter into Jerusalem, that sounds like something Ezekiel might say talking about the old temple. What do you got for us, Father Trevor?
Well, it's a great question. Glad to be on the podcast with you guys. It is. It is one of the. I think I've been a priest for almost 2 years now, not quite. So I'm still a toddler priest. And one of the biggest sort of shocks about pastoral ministry is how to actually prepare in the extreme complexity of people's lives, how to prepare them for sacramental union with God. There might be stirrings of faith, and how do you walk with them through those stirrings of faith to actually reconcile the circumstances of their lives in such a way that they can actually claim to be in communion with the universal church that Christ established, and the high point of that communion and the manifestation and the cause of it being the Holy Eucharist, right? So how do you actually walk with people into this new city? How do you get them to accept the church's teachings on mortal sin and confession and all these different things? It's a good question. That's been a learning curve for me for sure. Yeah.
And we haven't talked at the podcast about the disposition for receiving communion. We've talked about what Holy Communion means. We've talked about the real presence of Christ in the Eucharist. But yeah, this sort of awkward reality of you can't receive the Eucharist when you're in a state of mortal sin.
Yeah, one could talk in a positive way about, you know, what are the good dispositions, right? But the church doesn't set requirements there. The church doesn't say, you know, you have to feel a certain way. You have to have this very specific intention consciously in mind. That she doesn't say any of that, but she does set a sort of negative bar. You can't approach in a state of mortal sin.
So this is how do you make that pastorally accessible to your flock?
Yeah, the first thing, so you mentioned, Jeremy, just the awkwardness of Easter Sunday, you know, where it feels like millions of people are suddenly in your church when you're used to thousands of people in your church. So, you know, it's full to the rafters. You know that many of them have not been to church in a very long time. You have this pastoral sense about it. So what do? One of the first things that I do is I just welcome them and say, you know, in the homily, I'll just recognize like, hey, I know there are many people who have not darkened the door of a church for maybe a year, maybe 2 years, maybe 5 years. I see you. Jesus sees you. He's actually quite happy that you're here today. He delights in you. You know, so you make you just help people to understand, okay, God recognizes that I'm here. He recognizes my presence. I feel out of place. Oh, but his priest just said, okay, I can be here. You know, I don't have to like put on a front as if like, oh, I'm a church going Catholic. No, he recognized that some of us are not here. But then you also set certain boundaries. So before communion, I'll always say, you know, all of you know that even if you're not Catholic, you know that the Eucharist is the source and the summit of everything that we are as Catholics. We have rules about this. So if you're not a Catholic practicing ready to receive Holy Communion, or if you're not a Catholic at all, we still welcome you up in the communion line. You don't have to sit awkwardly back in your pew, but we just ask you to cross your arms over your chest. And when you come up, the minister will hold up the Holy Eucharist and will say a prayer. And I just ask you to make an act of faith. Jesus, I believe in you. Help me to make the next step in my life. You know, so you ask people to really try to engage, to put the car in gear, say, maybe I have a very latent faith right now. Maybe it's very weak, but I'm just asking for a little bit of faith to get me to that next step. That's kind of the first thing.
Yeah, and that positive step, I have to say, is something I don't think I hear spoken. One hears the sort of like, please don't, mm-hmm. but the please do side, one doesn't hear very often. And I'm trying to recall if I have ever heard the yet more delicate subject of mortal sin and communion addressed from the pulpit. I don't know if I have heard a homily on that subject.
Yeah.
It's just really hard to wade into those weeds.
It is, yeah. Well, we've been, at my parish, we've been taking it on head on. My deacons preach about it. Wow. I preach about it. So we've got a really good, you know, kind of understanding about that, hey, look, if you're not prepared because you're in the state of mortal sin, first of all, that doesn't mean you're out of place at Mass exactly. You know, you're still coming. You're still coming so as not to, you know, hurt your relationship more with God, you know, but you're also there even in the state of mortal sin. You're there. You're disconnected from God in a particular way, but you're still holding on to the hem of his garment, right? You're still there. You don't receive Holy Communion, but you can still be instructed with the word. Your faith is not living, but your faith is still, it's still there, and he's still going to use all of these things. But we encourage people, you know, if you commit a mortal sin, don't just give up your entire faith life, you know. Keep living, keep practicing, keep trying to keep some of your muscles exercising, if you will, in the spiritual life. Don't just give it all up until you can get to the to confession. But we preach confession a lot, and that thing that you were talking about, Jeremy, is, you know, John sees the heavenly Jerusalem coming down, descending like a bride prepared for her husband. And I reminded people in a homily recently that when we hear that, we want to encounter Jesus in all of his many faceted realities. And you guys have talked in this podcast about how the Holy Communion is entering into Jesus's reality. There is an aspect of him coming down to heaven, but there's also almost a greater aspect of him drawing us into his reality, which is the heavenly city. So when we come to the liturgy, to the divine liturgy, to the Mass, when we come to the Eucharist, yes, God is coming to us, but even more so, God is bringing us to himself. And in that mode of encounter with Jesus, nothing unclean comes with us, right? Nothing unclean can enter into the heavenly city. So if we want an encounter with Jesus where he's explicitly healing us, we go to the sacraments of healing. We can't just skip right to the sacrament of union when we actually have things and wounds and diseases that keep union from happening, if that makes sense.
So I love this image and this idea you're touching on, which I think is a little bit hard for us to get in mind. When we think of mortal sin, it's kind of an all or nothing. Either I'm in a relationship with God or I'm not at all. Whereas this image you're painting of, like, no, there's this kind of ladder toward communion. Just coming to church, that there's a spark of supernatural life in the sense that I have faith, mm-hmm. even when I'm coming to church. There's a spark that gets me in the communion line if I haven't been to church for years to at least get a blessing. Mm-hmm. There's more of a spark that takes me to confession. And this sort of gradual drawing toward ever deeper and more heavenly communion is a really beautiful image, and I think not one that maybe is a all or nothing kind of vision that is not as immediately recognized by us in the pews.
Maybe the Roman term, you know, the Western term might be actual grace, right? And I think that very often when we talk about what grace is, we only think that sanctifying grace is the only one that really matters in some sense. And in a sense, that's true, because ultimately sanctifying grace is the seed of heaven. When sanctifying grace reaches its perfection, it blooms into the beatific vision, right? It flowers, it reaches its completion there. But actual grace is this incredibly dynamic walking along with God, who, even if we're not in explicit communion with him, he's still prodding us. He's still, as St. Ignatius would say, he's still biting us. He's still, you know, allowing things to kind of hurt to drive us in the right direction. But maybe that's a little bit of what you're talking about as well, that God's still in control. And we can't just throw ourselves over the cliff of despair and just say, nope, it's all lost. I can't really do anything until I bring myself to the sacrament of confession.
Well, and I'm sitting here thinking about the Eucharist and, you know, the what is the Eucharist for, right? And a kind of classical line, which I think is strictly speaking true, is that the Eucharist is not the sacrament instituted to handle mortal sin.
Mm-hmm.
We've got another sacrament that was built for that purpose.
Exactly.
And one must go there before you come to the Eucharist, because that's not what it's for. In a backdoor kind of way, I wonder if the Eucharist isn't very much engaged at this level of biting, right? It's over there as this lure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are so many people who even though they've distanced themselves from all kinds of things, they hunger for the Eucharist.
Yes.
And its very inaccessibility may be what is pushing them into the sacrament built to handle their situation.
Yeah.
Kind of like what, you know, one sometimes is familiar with, you know, a young man who has, you know, led a fairly reckless life, and he pulls himself together because of the bride he wants,
mm-hmm.
and he knows she won't have him the way he is. And,
yes.
You know, and so while marriage was not built to clean up messy lives, and a backdoor kind of way can have that effect, you know, as a lure.
Yeah, and I would just say, you know, again, as a young priest, you know, not with decades of experience, but just in my brief time of being a priest, it's the church's boundaries that it draws that actually sometimes attract people the most. The church has not completely lost the sense of the sacred and the profane, therefore. The church keeps certain things delicately protected and even firmly protected from being sacrileged. So we have to reconcile. We have to work with people and take step-by-step appropriate actions to say, let's get you into a place where you can actually go to confession. You can say, I'm not going to keep sinning in a particular way. Then that's when we can go to Holy Communion with you. People, again, that's very hard. It's very hard. But if they see that the church really values what it says it values, it gives them hope that there's still something that God wants to share with me that I'm not experiencing now. There's still a sense of that.
Now, implicit in this distinction that we're discussing is the classical distinction that Aquinas makes and that the tradition makes over and over again between faith and charity.
Mm-hmm.
So you talk about being spiritually healthy and ready for communion with Christ. We're saying it's not just enough to believe that he's present in the Eucharist.
Mm-hmm.
There's this additional spiritual quality,
right,
that is charity, that is essential to be present in the soul for one to receive the Eucharist. Let's unpack that a bit.
I think we could get started on that by going back to what Father Tripper said earlier about the Eucharist being really our entry into God's domain. And this time I'm ripping from Frank Sheed, but you know, Sheed used to say, look, if you were going to Mars, you would need an oxygen pack of some kind, right? Because you're going into an environment that's not yours. Mm-hmm. And similarly, if you are going to enter into heaven, you need a divine life hack, so to speak. You need something added to you that makes you fit for that realm that is not your natural realm. It's something beyond you. And having charity is our, you know, shorthand for saying you have the divine life within you. Right, so that would be a starting step. Like this is its own realm, and you have to be the kind of thing able to live in that realm. Now, there might be something more specific that we should say now about charity, about love for God, and the way in which the Eucharist is the sacrament of love.
Right. Well, yeah. Well, in a way, right, it's true that already with the gift of faith, that's something that is in part proper to a realm beyond the mere human, right? Mm-hmm. And we're believing things that we can't fully grasp with our human minds on our own. We're doing something that in heaven we will have the vision, we will see clearly. But here we're already, in some ways, having faith is getting us a little bit ready for heavenly life. But yeah, the fundamental activity, so to speak, of heaven is that communion of love, the communion of love with the Father, the Son, and the Spirit.
The city that's coming down out of the heaven is prepared as a bride adorned for her bridegroom.
Right.
And it's this kind of jumping all out of chronological sequence into the end times that we do in the Mass, where we're suddenly in the wedding feast of the Lamb. One does not... What the bride should not just go to enter into the embrace of the bridegroom without love. Hmm. That's not right.
There would be a lie present there, right? If they were to enter into that kind of union without a real friendship.
And to go back to what you were saying, to gloss over the presence of that lie would be to make the marriage less desirable than it is. It's only by holding that line that we keep the tremendous goodness and fascinating beauty of this union in front of us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'm thinking of all this before we started recording. Father Trevor had mentioned how the show The Chosen and the challenge the show The Chosen places, because our Lord is so accessible. He's so approachable in The Chosen. We see people walking with him. But I'm thinking in this context, what's actually helpful is not to say, oh, The Chosen's misrepresenting something there. It's instead a way of saying, look, when we're talking about the Eucharist, as we've said before, we're talking about a heavenly reality. We're talking about a post-resurrection reality, in which case all of the approachability of our Lord, as evidenced in the Gospels, as evidenced in the reenactment of the Gospels in the show The Chosen, is that sort of slow bringing us to the fullness of Easter communion. Mm-hmm. It's the drawing us near. But when we actually talk about Easter communion, we're in this level of what eye has not seen, ear has not heard. It's so transcendent. They're not able to capture that on a TV show. They're not able to capture that very clearly in the narrative description of what happens in the Gospels even. That it's this moment of deep interior friendship. And the only way we're really able to fully appreciate that is in some ways with the negative guardrails, with the church warning us, cleanse yourself before you come, because this is not earthly life. This is the life proper to the resurrection. And that you need an air pack for. And for that, you need to go to confession first.
Thank you for listening to the Eucharistic Podcast at Wyoming Catholic College. To learn more about Wyoming Catholic College, visit wyomingcatholic.edu.